Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. How's your car running these days? Are you experiencing reduced mileage? Is the car pulling left or right? Does it start right up or struggle as the days get colder? Ultimately, is it less vroom vroom and more chugga-da-chugga-da? Well, it happens, but if not always in a clear way, you don't always know what's wrong with the car. And we want to help you out there. So today, we welcome your car care questions for auto mechanic Rick Karch, owner of Rick's Automotive in Champaign. He joins us from time to time to diagnose your car troubles. Just call us, tell us the make and model of your car, and describe the problem, and Rick will offer his best suggestions for a possible solution. Along the way, we will also share some tips on basic maintenance of your car as we head into winter and the holiday travel season. Rick Karch, welcome back to Focus.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us. As we get going here, if you want to join our conversation and get your automotive challenges diagnosed, you can call us at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. If you decide you would rather email, be sure to include the make and model of your car as well as a description of the problem within the body of the email. And if you can describe it all in 140 characters or less, you could tweet it to us. Our Twitter handle's Will Public Media, but I would say phone calls are probably ideal today. Again, that's at 333-9455. Or 800-222-9455. And while we're setting up some folks on the line, Rick, what are some basic things that every car owner should do in advance of winter to, in essence, winterize the car?
Well, the battery is number one. It's got to start.
Yes.
Generally, batteries, every 5 years, just replace it. You can have them load tested, and that can be done easily. Coolant needs to be checked. Make sure it's protected correctly, usually 34 below. 34 below is established by 50% antifreeze and 50% water. You don't want all antifreeze.
Why is 50-50 the ideal ratio for that?
That's just the way it works out to get to negative 34.
Okay.
And that's pretty much true of all coolant manufacturers. Wiper blades, lights need to be operational. Tires are important, and you know, in the winter it's a good idea to put a few extra things in the trunk, a blanket, shovel, gloves, things like that that may be necessary if you get stuck or have to help someone. Maybe
how about, salt or sand, is that a good
I think
idea?
Sand is a better choice.
Yeah.
And a lot of cars, you'll see people put 300 pounds of sand in the back of a pickup truck. Well, it's really not going to do any good.
I mean,
there's no weight back there to begin with. So, you know, I mean, people that own those cars know that. So sand is good, though, yes. It can aid in traction if a wheel is spinning. The other thing people need to remember when they get stuck is if you're stuck in such a manner that the undercarriage of the car is being suspended by snow, you're not going to get out of there.
You're going to need to get rid of the snow.
Yeah, you got to remove the snow or call a tow truck or get someone to pull you out. And rocking back and forth is really the only way you're going to get out. And it does absolutely no good to floor the accelerator pedal. In other words, spin the tires as fast as you can. It's just the opposite. You want the tires to spin slowly until you actually establish a rocking motion.
So that they sort of hug the ground. I mean, they need to actually...
And then shovel the snow from the back and the front of the tires so you have the ability to go forward and backwards. And then finally you can get a running start, basically, and get through that.
It's kind of hard to remember that in that moment. I mean, I've been in that moment. Mm-hmm. I think everybody has. And you're sort of frustrated. You're stuck there. And so you kind of want to gun
right,
the gas pedal. It's sort of instinctive.
Right. And that's making matters worse.
Okay.
So
good to know.
All right.
Well, we've got a number of folks already on the line, so let's get right to it, and we'll start with RJ in Terre Haute. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks a lot for this program.
Sure.
I have a 1990 Geo Storm with a Isuzu engine in it. It runs fine except for when you come to a stop to idle, it idles at about 12 or 1400 RPMs for about 20 or 30 seconds, and then it'll drop back down to 700 or 800. But it consistently does that all the time.
Does it matter if the air conditioning's on or off?
I hardly ever use air conditioning.
Yeah. Okay, well, in defrost, a lot of, most cars in defrost, the air conditioning does run. So when you start the car in the morning, it idles up, and then it progressively comes down by its own?
Well, it idles up to about 2,200 RPMs, and then it'll go back down to 1,400 or so.
You don't have a check engine light?
No.
Because that's too high cold. And obviously the number that you mentioned, 12 to 14, is too high warm.
Right.
So my first reaction is you might have a vacuum leak. You may have a problem with the throttle body sticking or the idle air control motor. Maybe just cleaning that might be the first step.
Uh-huh.
It's not that difficult to do. You could buy like a throttle body cleaner. It's an aerosol product. And is this something you want to tackle?
Well, I could get some help on it, but yeah.
Okay. So then you just remove where the throttle body is, which is where the cable goes
okay. From
the accelerator pedal.
Yeah.
And then you'll remove that, it's usually a black plastic inlet, which comes from the air cleaner, air filter housing. You just remove that and partially open the throttle plate and spray the cleaner in there. And when you first open it, if there's a lot of black carbon material in there, you're probably on the right direction. But that would probably be the first place to start.
So that's causing it to stick? Causes it to throttle up and stay there? Is that the idea?
Well, usually what happens is the throttle motor can't retract all the way or extend, whatever the case may be, and thereby it keeps the idle up a little high. But assuming there's no vacuum leaks, which if there were, he should have a check engine light.
What would cause then the idle to go back, for it to go back down? Is it that the engine warms up and then if there's some black gunk or whatever's on there, kind of loosens and melts away?
Well, the idle speed motor positioning or steps that it's in is influenced by coolant temperature. And the number one goal of all manufacturers from an emission standpoint is to get the engine up to operating temperature as quickly as possible. And the easiest way to do that is to increase the idle speed. And that's why it's a little higher when it's cold.
Okay.
But if the idle speed motor is being told to come down, but yet it can't do it, then sometimes it's a cleaning issue. There really aren't any adjustments there unless somebody's been playing with the base stop position of the throttle plate. The other thing that happens, too, is sometimes people, after they drive a car and it gets up to operating temperature and they shut it off, and then they get back in the car and start it, and then when they push on the accelerator, it's like you can't push on it, but you gotta like tap on it fairly hard. That's another good indication that the throttle body is all varnished up and the throttle plate is physically stuck, and you have to overcome that. And then once you overcome it, then the throttle body, as it heats up, of course, it expands. So cleaning is probably the place to start.
Okay, let's say I do all that and it still doesn't work. What electronic component would there be that could be replaced?
Typically, it's the idle air control motor.
Oh, okay. Okay,
and you monitor its position and engine RPM to determine if it's being told to do the right thing.
Okay.
But I would start with cleaning.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Thanks
for
the call. We'll go next to Mary in Vermilion County. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. I have a van, a 96 Ford Windstar van that isn't used very much. I don't have any trouble with it. I want to avoid any trouble with it. I just had about a year and a half ago the 30,000-mile checkup, so it's driven maybe once every week or 10 days. What do I need to do? I have my checkups. It sits in the garage with the tires in one place for a week or more at a time. What other things do I really need to be careful of to avoid problems?
Well, just try to always keep the gas tank full.
Well, I never let it get more than half full, mm-hmm. But that means I only I fill it in June and December. So I did. Someone mentioned something about putting some gas stabilizer or something like that in the tank once in a while, and I did do. I can't remember what additive I used, but I did do that once or twice.
Yeah, that product's referred to as Stabil. S-T-A-B-I-L.
No, I thought that was for lawnmowers and such. But anyway, actually, the last several times, I take it to the station to have the oil checked, but it's always so clean and clear, I don't have it changed. They do, you know, the checkups of the tire pressure and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the oil you should do once a year.
Regardless of
That's correct, because there's moisture that accumulates in there. If you're taking short trips,
they are all short trips.
Right. Condensation occurs in the crankcase of the engine, which is where the oil is, and that moisture will break the oil down. So you definitely need to do that once a year.
All right.
But I would strongly encourage keeping the gas tank more than 3/4 full, because the last thing you want is for rust to occur.
Yeah.
And then you'll have issues with that. So.
Well, one reason, of course, is I don't know of any other than self-service gas stations, and arthritis in my hands makes it very difficult to even open the gas tank, much less pump gas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I've limited it to just twice a year.
I see.
But anyway.
Well, maybe you can get a friend to go with you.
Strong hands.
That's right.
There you go. I'm sure you can figure it out.
Well, anything else about the tires? I did buy new tires about a year and a half ago.
No, just keep them properly inflated. And if the car sits for an extended period of time, when you take the car out, it may feel like thump, thump, thump.
Yeah, because of flattening?
Yeah, they'll look like a letter D, kind of.
Uh-huh.
And you just have to drive it until the tires get some temperature in them, and then that will start to go away. It will take time, though, particularly in the winter.
Uh-huh. Okay,
and then the battery, that battery is the only other thing. Do you have any issues with the battery going dead?
No.
Okay, well, that's good. Because sometimes if cars sit for a long time, I usually suggest some kind of battery tender that you would plug into the wall. But if you're not having any issues, then you don't need to spend money on that.
Okay. All right, then. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Right.
Thanks very much for the call. What are the appropriate circumstances to use a fuel additive? She mentioned fuel additives.
Well, usually fuel additives that we recommend is to be put in the gas tank, the bottle, you just pour it in the gas tank, is fuel injector cleaner,
mm-hmm.
4 times a year. And that's pretty important to do.
What does it do exactly?
It's a cleaner, and basically every time you shut your car off, most cars today are all fuel injected, and the opening on some of these injectors is only 4/1000ths. And every time you shut it off, there's a little drip that hangs from that injector. And if you've ever spilled gasoline on something, mm-hmm. and even after it evaporates, you'll see there's a ring there,
mm-hmm.
a stain. Well, that stain bakes and coats on the end of the injector, and it starts to affect the atomization of the fuel coming out of the fuel injector. And you'll start to get big drops coming off the side. If you ever bought a handheld spray nozzle for your garden hose,
mm-hmm.
and you bought one and you turned it on, and there's a whole bunch of big drops going off to one side and fine stuff going off the side. That's exactly what happens to an injector when it gets dirty and restricted. And all those big drops of fuel that are coming out of there, the engine can't deal with it. It can't burn that. So it just goes right out the tailpipe in hydrocarbons or unburned fuel. So your fuel mileage drops off.
Okay.
So the bottom line is the fuel injector is 4 times a year, pour it in the tank, to keep the injectors clean, and it does help keep fuel mileage like it's supposed to be. So if you notice fuel mileage is deteriorating and you've never used fuel injector cleaner, you might try using it.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're taking your car care questions for Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. He joins us from time to time to help diagnose your car problems. Just call us with the make and model of your car and a description of the problem, and then Rick will do his level best to determine what's wrong and suggest a solution. The numbers to call, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. Or you can email your car care question to will-talk@illinois.edu. Just remember to give us as full a description as you can within that email, including the make and model of the car. And we will go next to Mike in Champaign. Hi, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 1999 Mercury Sable, and about a month ago, you may recall that there was a morning with a tremendous downpour, and we were driving, and there was a significant amount of puddles forming in the street. And we drove over one, and all of a sudden, my wife, who's sitting in the passenger seat, has water coming up at her feet on the passenger side through the carpet. So we're wondering, is that a case where there's literally a hole in the car, or is that just because cars aren't built to swim, or what is there an issue there?
After the water came in, what happened?
It eventually receded.
And you didn't have to put a towel in there to dry it?
Not really. I mean, I took out the mat, obviously, and let that dry out, and just, yeah, I left the car with the windows open to let it dry out.
So it was like a half inch of water, an inch of water?
Probably at least an inch, I'd say.
Okay, then there's a hole in the bottom of the car.
Because
if you didn't remove the water, but it went away, it exited the same way it entered.
Okay.
Would be my impression. So you probably just stick your head underneath that corner of the car and look at the undercarriage there.
Okay.
And then make sure the fender well liner is in place, the plastic liner inside the fender on the right front.
Okay.
Because obviously the water came off the tire, so that would be the first thing I would be suspecting is, since you didn't remove the water, that's how it got in.
Did it only happen that one time?
It has happened, I recall, once about 4 years ago, and I think it was a similar circumstance, because, you know, generally you obviously try to avoid driving over large standing water. So it hasn't happened that often on that account.
Have you ever taken it to one of those automatic car washes where they have the water spray the undercarriage and have any water come in?
You know, I have taken it to many car washes, but I rarely do the undercarriage wash. Okay. It'd be an interesting test.
Yeah.
Well, next time you're in for an oil change, just mention it to the writer that when they have it up in the air, if they could look in that area.
Okay, and what would be, is this something that is easily fixable, assuming there's a hole in the bottom, or is it really time to get another car?
Well, it's only time to get another car if the rust is in areas of the chassis that are structural.
Okay.
But that needs to be a visual observation.
And is it also a concern in terms of air quality? Like, would any carbon monoxide potentially be getting in because of because of the opening in the bottom of the car?
No, not in that location.
Okay, great.
Is it something where he could just, like, it could be patched up in some way? Are there options to do that?
Well, yeah, in theory, you have to remove the bad metal.
Right.
I mean, it can get very expensive. It just needs to be looked at visually, determine if it's something that can be dealt with from the inside or if it's going to have to go to a body shop. So.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Kim in Champaign. Hi, Kim.
Yes, I have a question. My car is an Infiniti i30, and it has 299,000 miles on it. Mm-hmm. And so far it's running fine, but I was wondering, especially winter coming and all, is there any special maintenance I should do given the mileage on the car? And, you know, like the synthetic oils, are they better or not necessarily? Is there anything you would recommend for doing on a regular basis with a car with this high mileage?
Well, as far as the mileage is concerned, just the normal maintenance, and obviously you've been doing that for you to have gotten to this point. So you've obviously done things correctly. As far as your winter questions are concerned, how old's the battery?
I think it's about a year and a half old.
Okay, so that's fine. Coolant, have you had that checked recently?
You mean for the temperature rating on the coolant?
And being clean.
No, I have not.
Okay, so that needs to be done. And tires?
The tires are just last year, so then
okay.
No.
All right. And then the only other thing would be wiper blades, lights.
Right.
Windshield washer operation.
Right.
Those
kind of obvious things.
Correct. That, correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So on the radiator coolant, then if they find it's not clean, what do they do? Drain and replace it? Is that the idea?
If it's necessary, correct.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
We'll go next to Mike in Aurora. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Yes, I have a Chevy 2.2 liter engine in there. And I was just wondering how, the timing chain is what my question is about today. It says the original timing chain, 144,000 miles. And I was just kind of curious, how long should I be thinking about changing that?
Not until you start to hear a noise.
What kind of noise would I hear?
Typically, a timing chain noise occurs when you first start the car. And that's if the tensioner is collapsing. It's oil pressure fed, and it will chatter or clatter until the same time the oil pressure light goes out, the noise goes away.
Ah.
And the chains do stretch some, but number one is when you hear the noise, it needs to be replaced. Otherwise, it's termed lifetime.
Oh, really? Well, of course, now after listening to last caller with almost 300,000 miles, what's considered lifetime?
That's a good question.
Well, yeah, it's an expensive process, as I'm sure you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't really be doing anything until I hear a noise.
Okay. Because I have done it years ago in the past on, like a 3.8 or something, but it seemed like it was a lot easier than on this 2.2 will be, I don't know.
Correct.
All right. Well, that clatter now, it'll be kind of like a metallic clatter, you right? Is that correct?
Exactly.
All right.
It'll be audible. You'll know it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. He raises a good sort of almost philosophical question about cars. What is the lifetime of a car these days? I guess it really does depend on the make and model, and maybe in some cases you get lucky with one car and maybe not so lucky with another.
Well, yeah, that's true. It's like anything else, you know. Sometimes you get a good one, sometimes you get a bad one. But if probably the best answer to your question is to look at consumer reports.
Yeah.
Cars to avoid, and the cars that are rated high, and you'll find that the cars that are rated high, if you open up the newspaper and try to buy one in the classifieds, it won't be there.
Yeah.
But the other ones will be.
Right.
So that's what I tell everybody we do buyer's inspections all the time, and sometimes I call them post-buyer's checks, and sometimes the post-buyer's checks, news isn't always so good. So no matter what kind of car you're looking at, consult consumer reports. And the years make a difference. Typically, the first year of a product line is the one you might not want to buy.
I kind of feel as if, maybe it's just my own perception over the years, but that if we, you know, went back 20 years, there'd be sort of this general sense of you start to see problems in your car at 80,000 miles or by 100,000 miles. The lifetime of the car, there's a certain sort of range that you could say, okay, that's about how long most cars in most cases will last. And that number seems to have grown.
Mm-hmm.
So today, you can't think in those terms the same way. Like if you bought a car 10 years ago, it may last longer than the one you bought 10 years before.
That's true. Yeah.
It's just hard to know.
Yeah. But that research is well worthwhile.
Yeah. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and my guest is auto mechanic Rick Karch, owner of Rick's Automotive in Champaign. He joins us from time to time to field your car care questions. Just call with the make and model of your car and a description of the problem, and Rick will attempt to diagnose it and suggest a solution. The number to call is 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, and we will take more of your phone calls after a short break. This is Focus.
What's happening in Israel, Gaza, Egypt, Syria, Iran, Iraq, it's all interconnected with a lot of shifting and paradoxical alliances that are difficult to explain, which is why on the next Fresh Air, we talk with Robert Malley, the International Crisis Group's Program Director for the Middle East and North Africa. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. on AM 580.
WILL programming is made possible by Country Financial Representative Scott Jackson, Village at the Crossing in Champaign, committed to helping Central Illinois families achieve financial security and protect their home, family, and property since 1990. Online at scottjacksonfinancial.com.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and my guest is Rick Karch, owner of Rick's Automotive in Champaign. He's here today to field your car care questions. Just call in with the make and model of your car and a description of the problem, and Rick will do his best to diagnose it. The phone number is to call 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. And next up, we have Mark in Savoy. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
And what's your, tell us about, you've got an 89 Chevy, I see.
I got an 89 Chevy Celebrity station wagon. Wow. With my dad's for the better part of 20-something years. And it's passed to me now. And I noticed about 3 weeks ago, now I'm still kind of in the new ownership phase, but shortly after I started driving it, I noticed that as my speed dips below 20 miles per hour, it kind of sluggishly shifts into second gear, and it feels like my RPMs are increasing a little bit. Basically, it slows down more than average.
Well, first you made reference to the transmission, so we can eliminate, when you park the car and shut it off, you don't have an odor coming from any of the wheels, like a brake dragging?
No, the brakes seem to be functioning fine, and yeah, there's no odor other than the emissions, because by now the catalytic converter?
That's part of the exhaust, yes.
Yeah, or it's just so shot that it stinks, but other than that.
Well, if the car stinks, is the check engine light on?
No.
You know, if the car has
no light, no dash lights are on, and I checked the transmission fluid, and it appears to be the, you know, good color.
It's red.
Enough of it.
It's red?
It's red, pink.
Okay, all right. So let's get back trying to understand what's going on here. So if you're going 35 mile an hour and you take your foot off the accelerator, as the car slows down by itself, and it will downshift, are you talking about the downshift? You said the engine revs up, though. Are you talking about when you accelerate and it shifts from first to second, it revs up?
No, it's every single time when the speed, say I take my foot off the accelerator and I'm approaching, say, a stop sign, and I let the speed automatically kind of dwindle. When it dips below 20 miles per hour, I feel a little jerk, and the speed it dramatically drops faster than it had been. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that might be when it's shifting into first, then.
Oh, okay.
You might want to just go by a transmission shop and have them go for a ride with you and make sure you don't have any problems with the transmission. It seems okay.
Like a pretty nebulous problem.
Well, maybe. But I would have somebody go for a ride or drive, and you go for the ride, whatever the case may be.
Okay.
Just to make sure there aren't any issues. But is there a kind of a jerk associated with it?
A very slight jerk, yeah.
Okay.
Or more of just kind of a lurch, a slight lurch.
But this doesn't happen when you accelerate.
No, I don't. I don't notice it when I'm going up through the different gears.
I think that would be the best advice I could give you. Would be just have someone at a transmission shop go for a ride.
All right.
Just make sure it's not something issue with something besides that transmission.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thanks a lot, Rick.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And next up is Steve in Champaign. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a Chevy Impala, 2007, a lot of miles, 146,000, but primarily highway miles. Pretty religious about changing the oil, rotating the tires and such. But what's happening is when I decrease my speed, in other words, if I'm on the highway and I have to take the off-ramp or, you know, if there's a curve, when I have to decrease my speed, if I'm going over 50, it's a pretty steep decrease, I'm a lot of shaking in the front wheel. I mean, not like out of control shaking, but it's a pretty good size shimmy. And I've taken the car in as far as getting the, you know, brakes tested and all that, and they all seem to be operating fine. So I don't know if it's a balance or an alignment problem or what.
Does this only occur when you have your foot on the brake pedal?
Yes. Yes.
It needs front rotors.
Front rotors.
Correct.
Okay. And is that a serious thing, and is that a big expense?
No, it's not a big expense, but I do consider it a safety issue.
Safety issues, front rotors. Okay.
Does
all right. Well, thanks.
Yeah, that vibration that you're feeling, you're also going to feel it in your foot. And the steering wheel is going to go left, right, left, right.
Right.
The other thing that's happening at the same time that that's going on is it's putting additional wear on the steering components, too. So
okay.
It needs to be addressed.
Front rotors.
Correct.
All right. All right. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks very much for that call. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. My guest is auto mechanic Rick Karch, owner of Rick's Automotive in Champaign, and he joins us from time to time to field your car care questions. Just call with the make and model of your car and a description of the problem, and Rick will attempt to diagnose it and suggest a solution. The number to call is 333-9455, or if you're outside the 217 area code, call 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. Also, if you have a very brief, simple question, you could tweet us. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. But really, with today's show, you're probably best served by calling us. Or if you send us an email, be sure to send us one that is relatively detailed. We'll go next to Joan in Indiana. Hi, Joan. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Hello. How are you?
Well, how are you?
Well, I'm fine. I'm in my 07 Ford Edge, and I have, ever since I bought it about 3 years ago, I thought I would get better gas mileage, and I'm lucky to get 21, and I have done the following things. I have moved to a mid-grade gas instead of the lowest, which they told me to use, and I try not to go above 60 unless I'm near Chicago, and then you have to stay with the traffic, which is more.
How many miles are on the car, approximately?
I've got 71,000 miles on it, and it's been good except for... I keep thinking, why aren't I not getting any better gas mileage?
What's it supposed to get?
Well, it was supposed to be getting at least 25.
What are some of the things that could lead to reduced mileage? I imagine there are probably a number of possibilities.
Well, you do the normal maintenance, I assume, with the car.
Yes, okay. I just have the oil. I have the oil change regularly. I look at the sticker and have that done. And
air filter.
Tires?
Yeah, tire. Right. I have that all checked. I go to Ford dealerships, and I, you know, I know the people there, and and I, you know, take care of the car. I just thought, even hearing about the new Ford Edges, that they're supposed to get, I think, 31 at least. I think, wow, I hardly get 20. And once in a while on the highway, if I take a long trip, I will get better than that. But,
and you use the cruise control?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Two things, fuel injector cleaner 4 times a year, add it to the gas tank.
Fuel injector cleaner. Okay, I'll write that down.
Fuel injector. Tektron would be my recommendation for the product. It's in a black bottle. Mm-hmm. And then the next time you're in the Ford dealer for service, mention to them the mileage issue and ask them if they could monitor the oxygen sensors for you.
The oxygen sensors. Okay.
Correct.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for the call.
All right. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
And next up is Lee in Greenup. Lee, good morning.
Good morning. I got a question about the transmission on a 2007 Chevrolet half-ton pickup truck. Got 81,000 miles on it. And I need to know what kind of service I should be doing to that transmission, if the filter changed or the oil changed or et cetera.
If I remember correctly, you still have your owner's manual and maintenance manual?
Yes.
Okay. In there, it will tell you that, but I believe it was to have been done at either 50 or 60,000 intervals.
Are you saying changing the oil or the filter?
Both.
Both, okay.
Filter, gasket, and fluid.
Okie dokie, that's what I need. No, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks very much for the call. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. My guest is Rick Karch, owner of Rick's Automotive in Champaign. He is here today to field your car care questions. Just call in with the make and model of your car and a description of the problem, and Rick will do his best to diagnose it. The phone number is to call 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. You could also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Just remember to give us as full a description as you can within the email, including the make and model of the car if it's a specific car problem. We have an email from Gary who says, I have a 2004 Suburban and a 2004 Camry, and he wanted to know if you could discuss the types of brake pads to consider when he needs to replace them. Expensive pads or less expensive pads? So what suggestions do you have?
Definitely on the Suburban, ceramic brake pads. They'll cost you a little bit more, but I mean by a little, we're talking maybe $20 or $30. They'll produce less dust. They'll stop the vehicle much better, particularly if you're towing something and you get heat. Ceramic brakes don't absorb the heat as easily into the pad, so you don't have what we refer to as brake fade, where you're pushing on the pedal, and then it seems like the car's not slowing down anymore. That's fade, and it's due to heat. So ceramic brake pads. And I usually mention that to everybody when we talk about brakes.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of brake pads should I get? Well, the ceramic brake pads, they produce a lot less dust also. So on some of your import cars, if you've got a nice set of wheels and you're getting tired of cleaning them all the time, if you go to ceramic brake pads, they're going to be significantly less dust. And like I said, the pads are going to last a little bit longer. So as far as the expense is concerned, it kind of all works out.
How long should brake pads typically last?
It just depends on your left foot or your right foot, whichever one you use to step on the brake pedal. I mean, there's really not a good answer to that. I mean, we've got customers that, you know, they need brake pads every 20,000 miles. And you get some customers that have over 100, they've never replaced brake pads. Now, you know, like when I go to the racetrack, I go through brake pads pretty quick.
Yeah.
So there really isn't an answer.
I mean, there are people who have, you know, we refer to somebody having a lead foot when it comes to the accelerator. I guess the same thing is true when it comes to the brakes. There's some people who are more aggressive.
Yeah, and you get a lot of people that are left foot brakers. You probably have been behind them where the brake lights are on at 35 mile an hour.
Yeah.
Well, they're wearing brake pads just going down the road. So
I'm curious if there has been, when we go through periods where people are really focused on fuel efficiency, and especially as, you know, we have on our dashboards now on a lot of newer cars, indications of mileage in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Has that impacted people's driving habits to the point that things like replacement of brake pads tend not to occur as often because, you know, they're spending more time not putting quite much as much energy on the brakes because they're trying to maximize fuel efficiency? Or people just not that conscious as they're driving?
I don't know if it really has that much to do with brake wear.
Yeah.
Basically, what you're referring to is an expensive vacuum gauge that they've calibrated. That's
okay.
Really all it is. But, you know, like the lady mentioned earlier that called about the Ford Edge, her comment about 60 mile an hour, well, there's a huge difference in fuel mileage between, say, 70 mile an hour and 65,
right,
and between 65 and 60. And if you've, some of the older cars, that the automatic transmissions that were maybe only a four-speed transmission, and when it's in fourth gear at 65 mile an hour, that engine might be turning close to 3,000 RPM. and you get these six and now seven speed transmissions, it's down around 1500 or less. So obviously it's going to get better mileage. The other thing about mileage on the highway is people that don't use cruise control. They just don't realize how much better their mileage would be if they would use cruise control, because you'll find yourself constantly changing. You look down at the speedometer and all of a sudden you're going 70, and the next thing you look at it, you're going 60.
And the cars today in cruise control, I mean, it's sort of a fluid transition. Yeah, I mean, when they're going up and down gears, you almost don't really feel it anymore.
So, and the other thing about cruise control is you never want to use cruise control in the rain. It's a safety issue. If something happens to the car, and it's kind of the same scenario as when you go down a hill, you can kind of, if you have your foot kind of on the accelerator, you'll feel the pedal lift, and then you start to go up the hill, and the transmission will downshift in some cases and speed the car up. Well, the same thing can happen if the car senses with the cruises on in the rain that speed is being decreased because maybe the car is hydroplaned or slid in one direction, and immediately the cruise control is going to apply accelerator pedal, and that's the last thing you want happening when the car is not straight. So rain.
I've noticed this, not necessarily in rain, but using cruise control over long distances, and if the contours of the world around you are changing, I mean, the flatlands here in the Midwest, you have to worry about it, but you know, you head out east and hit the mountains or head west towards the Rockies or something like that, you get into regions where it's a little more hilly, you really can't use the cruise control, because it will do that. It will have that sudden jump in acceleration.
Yeah, exactly. What I usually do when I get into that situation is, as I'm going down the hill, I'll actually start accelerating above what the cruise control is set at, so that it doesn't kick down as much. Because every time the transmission kicks down and the accelerator goes to the floor, fuel mileage decreases. So the best thing to do is just turn the cruise off when you go back up the hill and just try to modulate it yourself without allowing the transmission to decelerate all the time. And so other than that, you're exactly right, you know, with cruise control.
Let's go next to Jim in Kankakee. Jim.
Good morning. I have a 5-year-old Avalon, 160,000 miles. When I start cold, I get a light metallic clitter clatter out of the engine that's associated with the acceleration. If I back off on the acceleration, the sound pretty well goes away. And after maybe 5 or 10 minutes of warm up, that sound is pretty much gone. And I just hear a light ticking over the engine when I go through the drive-through at McDonald's.
When you say 5-year-old, just I wanted to double check. So you mean it was new 5 years ago?
Yep.
160,000 miles in 5 years. Wow.
Yep.
You do a lot of long-distance driving.
Well, I'm the second owner, but yeah, the first owner drove it a lot.
Oh, okay.
And could have stretched the oil change intervals out a little bit. Not horrendous, but I don't think they might not have been as short as they should have been.
How often are you changing oil?
Let's see. I have it set for 7,000.
Okay.
Factory wants 5,000, I think.
Yeah.
It's always had full synthetic.
Okay. What kind of synthetic oil? What brand?
Oh, whatever the oil change place is putting in.
So you don't know?
That's right.
Okay. This noise, I think what you're talking about is maybe a lifter noise.
What?
Hydraulic lifter type noise? Is it?
It's a light clitter clatter. It doesn't impress me as being the crankshaft or the going out.
No, this is associated with the valves.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Have you had somebody listen to it?
I've had it in with other work and asked them to listen to it. But by the time they get around to paying attention to it, the engine's warmed up.
I see.
And they don't really hear it.
Well, maybe what you should do is drop it off the night before.
Yeah.
And let them start it. And just make sure it's not, you know, piston-related or piston slap, which I really doubt on an Avalon. I'd be more inclined to think it might be associated with the valve train. The valves. But I would do that. And if it is, if they can determine if it's one or two or how many it may be, and maybe if you look inside when you remove the oil cap and what little you can see, I understand. Have you looked inside where you would add the oil to see what it
I
looks
have.
Like?
Yeah, I don't see anything unusual.
Okay.
No white froth or anything.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if this is a case where it needs to have some cleaner run through it. But I would drop it off with some shop and explain the situation and drop it off the night before.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Best of luck, Jim.
Maybe lifters, probably not crankshafts, huh?
Correct.
That'd be good. Okay, that's good news. Thank you very much.
You're all welcome. Right.
Thanks for the call. We go next to Nate in Champaign. Hi, Nate.
Hi, Rick. I have a 94 Mazda B3000 with a 3-liter V6 in it, and the problem I'm having is you drive on the highway, for example, warm up for, you know, say I drive for an hour, 2 hours, well, then all of a sudden it'll shut off, and once it cools down, it'll start up again. Can you kind of help me out as to what this problem could be?
Does this car have a tachometer?
Yes.
Does the tach do anything funny? When you say shut off, do you mean like...
It just stops.
Okay, so let's address no check engine light?
Nope.
Okay, so when the car shuts off, I'll ask you a question.
Okay.
When it shuts off, can you kind of tell it's going to quit, or is it like somebody just flipped a switch?
Like someone just pulled the plug.
Okay, it's electrical.
Yep.
Because if it's fuel related, you can kind of notice, like, let's just say, for example, that the fuel pump quit. Well,
right,
as the fuel pump quits, you're going to kind of be stepping on the accelerator more and more and more and more, and the car's going to keep slowing down,
right,
and the engine's going to keep running.
Right.
So when it quits after 1 to 2 hours, if you would be happen to be looking at the tach, that's a good diagnostic tool, because if it starts jumping around or dancing, then a lot of times you have something going on with the ignition system or the ignition module where it's intermittently working before it quits.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you have to let it cool down and then it finally starts again. And when it finally starts, does it start immediately and run and idle smooth?
Yep.
Okay. So if it was fuel, the car, you would crank and crank and crank because you'd have to reestablish fuel pressure. And then finally when it starts, it might run a little rough because there's air in there.
Mm-hmm.
But since it idles fine when it starts, we're back to ignition.
Okay.
And again, and then you could also be looking at a computer issue too. So it's kind of a tough one. But if you can pay attention to the tach, that would be helpful to whoever diagnoses the car.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks very much for the call. I'm afraid we're down to just like the last couple of minutes, so I just want to ask you, what one thing do people most tend to forget to do to prepare their car for winter? What's the biggest mistake that people tend to make?
The battery.
The battery. They don't think about it.
No, and then, you know, it's kind of funny because when people come in and then, you know, you'll call them and tell them it needs a battery, and then you'll say, well, you know, they'll say, well, you know, I didn't really notice any problem, but if you pay attention when you start your car, how quickly the engine turns over before it starts, and just kind of register that in your brain, and when that starts to seem like it's not turning as quick as it used to, spinning as quickly as it used to, or starting as quickly as it used to, it needs a battery. And you know, it's a huge inconvenience because it usually happens at the wrong time. It's raining. You got to wait for the tow truck. So every 5 years, just replace it. And other than that, oil services, some of these new manufacturers are pushing these oil service intervals up to 15,500 miles. That's way too long, even on the synthetic oils. So oil change is cheap insurance for longevity, dependability of the car.
I sense there's also some inherent advice in something else you just said. You were talking about waiting, you know, keeping in mind how long it takes for the car to turn over and start up. There's sort of this, for a lot of people, if you really spend a lot of time with one car, you just kind of get a feeling that something's wrong. It may be you think you hear a noise, but you're not sure, or you think it handles differently, but you're not sure. Does that mean probably, yes, there is something wrong?
Yeah, it's correct.
So trust your instincts when
that's
it comes
right.
to that kind
They're
of thing.
That's right. You're usually right.
Well, let's wrap it up there. Rick Kartz is an auto mechanic and the owner of Rick's Automotive in Champaign. Rick, thanks for being with us today.
Anytime.
We welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website, will.illinois.edu/focus. Remember, you can hear this program twice each weekday, live at 10 a.m. Central Time, then repeated weeknights at 8 on WILL AM 580. If you know someone who might enjoy hearing Focus but can't tune in during the day, let them know about that evening rebroadcast. Also, if you know anyone who might enjoy hearing Focus who lives outside of our listening area, let them know. We stream the program live every day at will.illinois.edu, where you can also listen back to past programs. Each day's show is usually up on the web by early afternoon. Focus is also available as a free downloadable podcast. To sign up, again, visit the Focus page of our website, will.illinois.edu/focus. On tomorrow's show, in advance of World AIDS Day this weekend, we will talk with Mike Benner. He's director of the Greater Community AIDS Project, about GCAP and what it does and about the state of research and treatment surrounding HIV and AIDS here and around the world. We will also talk a little bit about the fact that it's the 25th anniversary of World AIDS Day. That's on Thursday's show. On Friday, Kevin Waspy will be here to field your questions on personal finance. Anything you want to know about investments or in particular, as we're closing in on the end of the month, you may have the end of the calendar year, you may have some specific ideas in mind for investments, things you want to do before December 31st. We'll have that opportunity for you then on Friday. And then on Monday, a conversation about winter weather preparedness with our old friend, meteorologist Ed Kieser. That's all ahead in the coming days on Focus. Today's program was produced by Travis Stanzel. Kyle Mabry's our technical director. He handled your calls. I'm Craig Cohen.